we're wrapping up this year's position ranking series with the cornerbacks, why we see year-to-year volatility for a lot of these guys, the coverage versus pass rush debate, an enlightening conversation with Jaguar star A.J. Bouye, and of course, our ranking of the top 10 cornerbacks in football. It is a very big show on the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am Gary Gramling. He is Andy Benoit. We have reached the season finale of the position rankings series. And Andy, there are so many twists and turns in this show. This is going to be worthy of a finale right here.
I did kind of find this one a little bit twisty and turny because the guy who is going to top our rankings, and we'll talk about many things cornerbacks today, but the guy who's going to top our rankings, I don't know. He got, well, can I say he got four first place votes, and I don't know if I would have guessed that it would be him, even though I wound up voting for him.
Yeah, it was a surprise unanimous decision, I'll say that.
Yeah, it was. This is I don't know if it's a changing position, but the top of at the cornerback spot has been, there's been a lot of turnover, I think. The top five guys on our list, I'm looking at it now, and we'll reveal it later, big drama. The top five guys, I say they were either very, like one of them was great in 2018 and very so-so in 2019, or vice versa. There hasn't been a lot of consistency at the top at this position across the NFL lately.
Well, I kind of want to start with that discussion right there, Andy, and I guess I'm not thinking the top so much. I'm almost thinking like the middle class of cornerbacks, and I don't know if this is just anecdotal evidence I'm going off of here, but you think back to a guy like Robert Alford, who was a very below average starter, and then he was a very above average starter 1 year, and then he was below average again, which is why he's no longer in Atlanta. A guy like Malcolm Butler, who I think 3 years ago we would have pegged as an absolute rising star, and look, he got that type of contract. He was not good last year. I mean, he wasn't. I don't know how else to put it. Why are we seeing this kind of, I guess, year-to-year volatility at this position?
Yeah, I think there's maybe an inherent streakiness with cornerbacks at the time. Like, Butler was very iffy for much of the season, but I thought in the second half of the season, he looked more like Malcolm Butler that we expect. Not top 10, but he was a legitimate quality starter. Marcus Peters was the same way for the Rams. Some guys had some highs and lows. It's a little bit, I don't know if it's scheme, like Marcus Peters' example, he's a little bit scheme dependent. He's a zone corner, and the Rams took a little too long to recognize that and eventually made their adjustments on defense. I don't know if they took too long, but they took a while. It took them a little longer than they probably would have guessed going in. Butler's a man-to-man corner. Man-to-man corners, you might be a little bit streakier. I don't know, to be honest, though, but I do think, because I think it is the top-heavy guys as well, Gary, that are, I think it's a streaky position. The more I look at it, the more I see who we have rated as high as we do, I think it's a streaky, inherently streaky position.
It reminds me, if I could cross sports here, which helps no one understand this better, but I'll throw it out there anyway. In baseball, every year you get like a handful of short relievers who have like amazing stat lines, and and then they come back out next year and they have a 5 ERA, and it just sort of I wonder if it has something to do with the sample size of number of plays that you are directly involved in. I mean, you look at a guy like Peters last year. Peters was toasted pretty frequently, like weeks, I would say like weeks 4 to like week 7. Mm-hmm. It seemed like just every week he was giving up a big play, and that almost like that skews how your season performance was viewed.
Well, remember, it's a reactionary position, so you are totally at the mercy of the offensive design when you're a cornerback. So if you give up a play in week 4, there's a very high probability that your opponent's going to scheme a very similar play against you in week 5, because what else are they going to do? They're out there scheming, and corners are who all pass plays basically go after. Sometimes you attack the safety by design, but those are usually full designs. Individual designs start with attacking cornerbacks. So it's probably one where when it rains, it pours a little bit, because until you can correct your own weakness, you're going to get your weakness attacked again and again and again.
My next question And we talked about this a little bit on the safety show, but not too much. So this is more of an entire defensive backfield or really even back seven type of question here. There's been discussion that if you have to choose between coverage and pass rush, the coverage part is more important. I tend to think of it as it all plays into coverage. Just if you have a really good pass rush, your coverage can be, it turns your B-plus coverage into A-plus coverage or your C-plus coverage into B-plus coverage. And it's all tied in. But I guess in a very global view, you can go to like quick strike stuff and negate a pass rush if your receivers just can't get open against a team with really good cover guys. You don't get open.
Yeah. So what you're saying is having quality cover guys is a sure way to stifle an offense.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think there's some validity to that. I mean, it's a chicken or egg kind of thing a little bit, because if you say, well, if you have an absolutely dominant pass rush, then you stifle the offense in different ways. You force the offense to get the ball out sooner than they maybe would want to. You force them to keep guys into pass protect, which often can make an offense get the ball out later than they'd want to. Like the Texans last year were a good example of that. So I don't know if there's one way or the other. I don't know if one's better than the other. I do know this. Scott Turner said this to me years ago. He's a Panthers QB coach. He's Norv Turner's son. He's a smart young coach, and I love visiting with him. He said, in the simplest terms, in the NFL, the defensive linemen are better than the offensive linemen, and the wide receivers are better than the cornerbacks. And you have to start with that understanding there and then decide how are you going to scheme and approach the game accordingly. And that's a great broad statement. Now, what Scott would also tell you is it still matters who your players are. Who are your defensive linemen? Who are your cornerbacks? And that varies from team to team. I have always kind of enjoyed seeing cornerbacks. I had seen a team with great corners. Like if I were building a roster, all things even, I probably would build for corners and believe that I could manufacture pressure. But that just is my approach to football. And that could be because maybe I understand defensive scheme better than I understand all the nuances and techniques of defensive line play. I mean, I don't know. If J.J. Watt were in a pool of defensive linemen, it'd be hard to not take him before any other player. So I do think it just varies from team to team, which is what's great about football. People always say, well, football's like a chess match when they're trying to complement football. And chess, the pieces are all the same from one player to the next, and they go one at a time. They move one little square at a time. Football, everyone's pieces are different, and they go anywhere at any time, and that's how you play that game.
I quote you quoting Scott Turner quite a bit. I really like that quote.
Which means I've said it on the show before.
Frequently. I think I've said it on the show once or twice.
Have I said it that many times?
You probably said it. I'm going to say you said it. Let's set the over-under at 4.5. And I probably said it 2.5.
Really?
It's a great quote.
It is a great. Do you know where we were when he said it? Have I told the whole story? Not that it's anything remarkable. I'm just trying to get a feel for how much of the show I don't remember saying things on.
No, I do want to know where you were when he said it.
We were in Serta's coffee shop in Mobile, Alabama, right downtown.
Okay. That's all right.
See, it's nothing spectacular. I think Jay Glazer was a few tables over.
I was hoping for like Arby's or something.
Why Arby's?
Oh, you could get 5 roast beef sandwiches for $5.95.
I've never been to Arby's, actually.
Yeah?
No.
It's pretty kind of okay sometimes.
Yep. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Brandon's given the begrudging so-so gesture right now. Brandon Nix, our producer.
Arby's is okay. It's okay.
Well, for years, I thought it was a hamburger place, and I thought, okay, I'll go to Arby's. And then I got up there and thought, well, it's just freaking sandwiches? Do they even have other meat? And I was led to believe they don't, so I never went in.
It was a big-time go-to in college because you just can't beat the value.
Okay. Taco Bell was like that in our town.
All right. Fair enough.
How did we get... I mean, this is horrible here. What are we even doing?
This is the Arby's portion of the show.
Okay.
This is one of the twists and turns of the season finale here.
Somebody say something about David Putty, and then we'll move along.
I do have one other point I kind of want to make on the old pass rush for shorthand we'll call it pass rush versus coverage type of thing. I feel like you can generate a pass rush with one great player or maybe two really good players. If you have one terrible player in coverage, you kind of like it's much more difficult to build an entire back seven as far as coverage goes because it's a reactionary position and because if you have one really weak link, that's going to be exploited and it doesn't matter what else you do.
Yeah, I agree. And that gets back to the nature of it being a reactionary position. Same thing with offensive line. If you have a weak pass protector, then that's where the pass rush designs will go. All the stunts, the twists, the blitzes, what have you. So it's more important than certainly if we're talking the floor for this position. It's, we always think of building a roster in terms of ceilings, but maybe you have to look at it as a floor as well. It's more important to have quality defensive backs than quality defensive linemen because it's harder to hide a poor defensive back.
Yeah.
That's basically what you're saying.
Yes, that is what I'm saying. It is people who kind of say, well, you just got to build up your secondary. It's difficult to build up your secondary because if you have one really bad player in your secondary, it really doesn't matter how well you've built around him.
The teams that have had really awful seasons, like all-time bad historic defensive seasons, they've usually had issues in the secondary, a lot of injuries at one position within the secondary, like the Falcons last year, and they were not a historically bad defense, but they were a bad defense. They had all their safeties went down. And I remember the Saints, the year they gave up all the record for most yards, I think they had like their top three or four cornerbacks all went down at one point. So it's that there is something to that. And who agrees with you, Gary, besides me, I agree with the point, is Bill Belichick. This is how the Patriots are built. The Patriots, we always the Patriot way, they're not going to pay anybody. Well, they paid Stephon Gilmore a few years ago. He was a free agent, unrestricted free agent. They paid top dollar for him because they understand we want to have a number one corner to scheme around. And we'll let a guy like Trey Flowers leave or we'll trade Chandler Jones. But they signed Darrell Revis a few years ago as well. They've always gone out of their way to have a number one corner. And now we see other Patriot type of teams do that as well. Matt Patricia in Detroit's the obvious example, and they have a true number one corner in Darius Slay, and they've drafted other guys, and this was a little bit before Patricia got there, but there's always talent at that position. There's always versatility and there's always depth.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's been Bob Quinn there for a couple years,
right?
Too, so
good, that great, that's point. And Justin Coleman's another, there's the other example of his striving for there.
And that's been a Patriots style team for a while. One more, Andy. And by the way, we do have an interview with AJ Bouye coming up later in the show in which he simply blew my mind with one of his answers. Like every once in a while, someone tells you something, someone much smarter than you tells you something that is the complete opposite of what you always thought, what you thought for years and years. And that happened during this interview. And I wept openly.
It was a beautiful thing. By the way, Titans are another Patriot type of team. Then they've invested in three first round or first rate caliber free agent or rookie corners to put that to bed.
Yep. One more here, Andy. Again, this is more general, general secondary talk as opposed to corner specifically. But late in the season, we talked about this a ton, the quarters coverage, the cover four looks. We saw it work so well against the Rams, and I guess my question to you is this going to be a trend we see league-wide going forward in 2019?
Perhaps. I know there are some people who believe you can dabble in quarters and just install it this week and play. The Patriots did that against the Rams in the Super Bowl, and the Rams probably wish that they had had a few more opportunities to prepare to beat quarters coverage, because if you do just install it without having it be part of your main repertoire, and with New England, it is not. They're not a quarters defense. And just for those who aren't familiar, quarters coverage, the outside corners each have a fourth of the field, and then the two safeties, they're back playing split safety, back together deep. They each have a quarter of the field, and you kind of play off each other that way. That's the simplest form. you know, the Patriots were not very buttoned up in the way they played quarters. They had some sloppy plays in the Super Bowl, and they got away with it. The Rams didn't beat them deep a few times. That the one that everybody saw, that it wasn't just this one, but the one to Brandon Cooks in the back of the end zone. Yeah, that McCourty broke up. You know, that when our guy Stephon Gilmore is the one who got beat on that play, by the way. But there are opportunities. If you play quarters, I had a coach tell me, if you play quarters, you've got to do it really well. It's a difficult coverage because of all the matchup rules and principles. The biggest takeaway rule is quarters is a zone coverage that becomes man-to-man once a receiver gets vertical within your zone. So if I'm outside and a guy runs a certain distance downfield, he's in my zone, I'm now becoming a man defender against that guy. Now, the problem, the difficulty with that, first of all, how do we determine how far downfield is it? Usually it's if the guy passes the linebackers. If the receiver gets past the linebackers, we consider him downfield and we'll match up. But what offenses do is put multiple guys in little areas where it's hard to tell, well, is he past the linebackers? Is that guy past the? It's just hard. It's a quarters, a beater. You can attack quarters coverage. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is when it does become man-to-man, you still have to consider some help elements at times and realize it's man-to-man with help principles depending on the formation. So, I mean, we could go into quarters for 5 hours here, which is why a lot of people believe it's not one you can just install and play all of a sudden. You need to be doing it with some regularity.
All right. Well, look forward to that five-hour show on quarters coverage coming up later this offseason. But before we unveil the rankings here, Andy, just a couple of quick programming notes. Next week, we will have a mailbag show. We will most likely be revealing a little bit of the all-average team and the all-second-chance team, all-second-act team, I think is what Andy calls it, and he wants you to find players who have switched teams and then become much better after they were sort of treated as busts at their first stop. I say the guy can do it within one team.
No, because that's just a late bloomer team then. That's just a late bloomer team.
But that's kind of the same thing.
No, it's not the same thing. Second act, you went somewhere, you had a change of scenery, change of scheme, change of coaching staff, change of uniform. It's the second act. I can see the look on your face, mm-hmm. and I'm winning this argument.
No,
it's just settled in. I just said something like what AJ Bouye said. I've changed your mind, draft, and now you're crying. Look at you go.
They're tears of joy. That is okay. It's a pretty good point, but I've already been saying all offseason, you can send it as guys who stayed on the same team throughout. So,
but you won't get on the show, and you won't get acknowledged if you do. You're welcome to send it that way.
It's a living constitution we have on the show, but we don't have time to amend it at this point. How's that? How's that for an answer?
That's fine. Are we getting enough to fill out a team? I mean, do we have a good solid team in place at least? Potentially.
Yeah, I think so. A couple people have sent in entire teams. A couple of people have just sent single player nominations. Either one is fine. You can send it to talkback@themmqb.com. That is preferred. You can also tweet at us. You can Facebook message us. Whatever you might want to do. One more note. We're actually taping a little bit earlier this week. Usually the Bad Football Movies tapes before us. But it's a very special episode of Bad Football Movies coming up. It's going to be Jerry Maguire.
Argue it's a good football. Isn't it a good football movie?
I think we'll find out. Sometimes we start these movies and we discover they are good football movies halfway through. I've only done one of them, but Jonathan Jones is going to be back in for this one. He was on the inaugural episode when they did Draft Day. It's going to be a very, very special episode. And I do just want to say my first job in journalism was at the Hartford Courant. My first job as a professional journalist. And one of my coworkers, his name was Jerry Maguire.
Was it really? This would have been, what year was it? Was this before or after the movie? It would have been
after the movie.
Yeah.
After the movie. And he loves when people say, show me the money to him.
Does he really? He's got to be sick as hell about that by now. Like, that's got to be.
It's a great name. It's just a really good name. And then it just became the worst name you could possibly have.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? Not to like take it in a horrible direction, but wasn't there a newscaster named Jerry Sandusky in Cleveland, Ohio, or some area like that? And he was fairly well known, and then he had to deal with different spelling on the Jerry, but he had to deal with that.
Yes,
I always think about when that kind of thing happens. There was actually a second Seinfeld reference on the show here after David Putty and Arby's. There was a Seinfeld episode about that, where I think a guy that Elaine was dating had the name of a serial killer. Mm-hmm. They called him out at Giant Stadium. So we're still talking football here. They call like I think they called that as he left the lights on in his van or something. It was something that he probably wouldn't call you by name at a stadium for.
Yeah.
Ever. Would you ever get called by name and like come to the front desk at Giant Stadium?
I've never heard that happen at an event. But I know exactly that was a really good episode and a memorable scene. So yes. take a moment to remember it right now before we move on.
Okay, there we are. What do we got? Top 10.
Top 10. And this is the other twist. This is going to really blow minds out there. Our third voter this week is Ryan Taylor. And our fourth voter this week is Reed Foster. We had four voters on the season finale.
We did. We brought them both in for this final one, which all that does is diminish our votes, actually, I later realized.
Yes, that is what happened. But this is a M. Night Shyamalan type of twist going on here with the fourth voter.
So our first place guy in this list got an all-time record for first place votes, too. He had more first place votes than anyone has ever had in any of our top countdown shows ever at the MMQB.
That is exactly right. Our first ever first place vote performance for this gentleman who will receive that great honor later in the show. But first, an equally great honor, the others receiving votes. And because we had four voters, Andy, we have an all-time high 20 others receiving votes. This is so happy.
Mm-hmm.
This is making you feel so good.
So 20 others receiving votes and 10 that have made it for sure, which I count that as, what, 30 cornerbacks?
30
so
cornerbacks.
Basically one per team, which means we're now getting into, by definition, some of the average cornerbacks across the NFL.
Number one on their teams. If you disperse them evenly, they would all be number ones. How about that?
And I bet when you get done reading this list, there are less, we're talking others receiving votes. I bet there are less than three or four number one corners.
All right.
I see one guy that's way too low. I wish I'd voted him higher right now.
We are about to find out right now. And when I read these 20 names, it is going to warm your ice cold heart, Andy. Starting from the guy with the fewest votes and going to the guy with the most votes who didn't quite make the top 10. We have Jimmy Smith, Pierre Desir, James Bradbury, Kareem Jackson, Aqib Talib, Logan Ryan, Adoree Jackson, Desmond Trufant, Bryce Callahan, Richard Sherman, Joe Hayden, Jair Alexander, Casey Hayward, William Jackson, Xavien Howard, Kyle Fuller, Denzel Ward, Kenny Moore, Darius Slay. And by the way, Darius Slay missed the top 10 by 1 point.
That's all right. We've been giving him a lot of love on Twitter lately. He's been giving the love back, too. He's a very active NFL tweeter. The guy that I thought needs to be higher on this list is, and he's been too inconsistent lately, so I understand the fall, is Desmond Trufant.
Yeah.
There aren't many corners that can play outside and inside. He's one of them. Alexander for Green Bay, Jair Alexander, he'll be one of them as well. Casey Hayward. Remember, Hayward was one of those. He started as a slot corner with the Packers.
Yep.
Yeah, he's now basically an outside corner with the Chargers. He tends to take the biggest receiver as well. So he's like a big, they treat him as a physical outside corner. And then Kenny Moore, I love Kenny Moore, as you know. He's another guy who plays a slot and can also play outside. So I think Logan Ryan as well. So more of these slot corners, there are more guys who can play inside and outside than there used to be. The difference with Desmond Trufant, though, and also maybe Alexander, is they can play zone inside. A lot of guys who can play inside or outside, they have to play man-to-man if they slide from the outside to the inside. Kenny Moore can play zone as well. But most guys can't play man and zone inside. It's the spatial reasoning is hard to adapt to as a slot corner if you're not used to playing zone inside.
Interesting. And you love Kenny Moore, obviously. Everyone loves Kenny Moore. He's a great player. He's a great dude. Andy had a really good story on him a couple weeks ago, which I will link to in the episode description if you want to check it out. But you made a good point about Kenny Moore. They list him at 5'9", but he has the Seahawks-style 32-inch arms that allow him to play bigger.
Yep, absolutely. Seahawks prioritize 32-inch arms. The Falcons do as well. They want that arm length, and they believe that that's where football takes place. Because if you think about football, you don't play it above your head. It's not like basketball where the object's above your head. It's you play it relative to the men in the space around you. So it's where you can reach. It's where you can get your body to. It's all the peripherals around your body. It's not really a game that takes place very often above your body. So arm length, I think they're onto something there, prioritizing arm length over actual size, height and weight, especially height. I think that's a smart thing.
It's also why I love DeAndre Baker, the Giants' first-round pick out of Georgia this year. He's one of my favorite guys in the draft, and everyone kind of said, you know, he's feisty, but he's small. He's 5'10". He's just not going to translate well to the boundary in the NFL, and he got to the combine. The only thing I really care about at the combine is really the arm length measurements on cornerbacks. That's the only thing I pay attention to. I will, you know, obviously the huge outliers you always have to pay attention to. When a Jakai Polite shows up and everyone's expecting him to run a 4.6 and he runs like a 5 flat, that stuff you notice. But I always look at cornerback arm length is one of the is one of the big things for me. So I was psyched when DeAndre Baker measured 32-inch arms.
Yeah, I see that. And so to go on our list real quick, because I kind of believe, even though arm length you can measure, I think it's something you can also see on film. You have to also play long. And some guys play longer than their body suggests. Like they just have a way, and it's an efficiency of movement. It's your technique, whatever it is. But looking at our others receiving votes, because I know I tease about these guys, and it's annoying that we go through them all, but there are some good players on this list. Jimmy Smith and Pierre Desir are guys that play long. I think Drains Bradbury plays kind of long. Logan Ryan can play pretty long. Jair Alexander, I've seen all the snaps, but I don't have a mind's eye. He's played so many different positions. I don't have a visual of what he is yet as a corner, but my guess is he'll play long as well. It's the ability to play long is every bit as important as actually being long, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's get to the top 10 here. Number 10, AJ Bouye, who again, interview coming up after this list. Number 9, Tre'Davious White. Number 8, Byron Jones. I want to start with Jones here, Andy, and he was a guy who moved around positions, and then you really saw him blossom last year. He had an all-pro type season in Dallas. What do you credit that to? Just basically finding the right spot for him?
I think so. And we loved him because he moved around so much early in his career. You and I were always, oh, Byron Jones, he's the best. And then it never quite came that way. And then they move him to right corner. And we think, I don't know. We kind of like him as a versatile guy. And sure enough, I had him first team all pro at right corner last year for Dallas. And I love play stoppers more than playmakers at cornerback. So guys that get interceptions, and there's obviously some value to that, some big value to that. But your job first and foremost is to stop completions or stop pass attempts.
Yeah.
That's ultimately what a corner does. And Byron Jones, I think, fits that profile very well. He is a disruptive, physical matchup defender. And in cover three, which is what Dallas plays, it's a zone coverage. Unless you're an outside corner, then for you, it's often man-to-man, especially if you're on the weak side, because most cover three schemes, they convert it to man coverage on the weak side for that corner. Jones is a good matchup corner like that, and he can actually take tight ends in man coverage too if he has to. He took Zach Ertz last year and was very effective in that matchup.
Number 7, Chris Harris. Number 6, Marlon Humphrey. Number 5, Xavier Rhodes. Now, Rhodes and Harris are of course, veterans of this list. Marlon Humphrey is a newcomer. I was surprised he ended up as high as he did on our list, but you love Marlon Humphrey as you know, a breakout, even more of a breakout guy in 2019.
I do, and I didn't realize I did so much because Baltimore rotates at cornerback, and Humphrey's a big key in that regard, by the way, because Jimmy Smith has to play right corner. He can technically line up in other spots, but I don't think he's comfortable doing that. So if Jimmy always has to be at right corner, it helps to have other guys that can do other things, and Brandon Carr can go to the slot or play outside. And I think Humphrey, when he's in there in place of Smith, which is once in a while, he can play right corner, he can play left, he can go anywhere, and he's their best matchup and best overall back level pass defender. So I knew he was good. And this time of year, Gary, I'll go through my film notes. I'll print them off and I'll just walk around reading them and catch up on every team that way. And when I saw Humphrey just reading the Ravens every game, weeks 1 through 16, the totality of it, he stood out every week as a big difference. Makes plays on the ball. He's very good against in-breaking routes, which is hard to have in a corner, especially when you're an outside corner. I think he understands spatial reasoning. He was an important piece to what they did week in and week out. And I get annoyed with you because you do these projections on this list. I'm surprised you don't have a couple of rookies out here in top five by now. But I kind of am voting him a little bit on projections. I think he's going to take a big leap into stardom this year.
Number four, Marshawn Lattimore. I was going to say,
was he better as a rookie, Lattimore?
I thought he was a little bit better as a rookie.
I did too. And when I read the Saints notes, it kind of came out that way. Now, I will say this. He is a true number one corner. And with cornerbacks, you have to look at their process as much as their results, because they're going to get beat at times. Everyone's going to get beat. Like Scott Turner said, the receivers are better than the corners. And by the way, the rules are set up to help the receivers as well. So you can't assume the corner is going to win or get stops all the time. There was a game against Atlanta last year. It was the first Falcons game, which I want to say was week 2 for the Saints. And the plan was for Marshawn Lattimore to take Julio Jones, which they typically do. That's how the Saints have matched up. And they'll still give Lattimore some safety help in that equation. So the Saints, and Julio's maybe the NFL's best offensive weapon. But the Saints don't view Lattimore as a pure shutdown guy in and of himself. But Calvin Ridley lit them up opposite Lattimore. So what they did at halftime was switch it and put Lattimore on Ridley on an island, and then we're going to guard Julio with a bevy of other guys. And Lattimore took Ridley out of the game, and it changed the whole flow and nature of that game. It was a shootout, and it was a big deal to be able to get Ridley out of there. That, to me, is true number one corner type of stuff. Yeah, I don't care what the stats are. It's can you go and play cover zero and meaningful moments, and Lattimore, I think, can still do that. I think he'll do that better and better moving forward. I thought he still did it last year, even though I liked him a little more as a rookie.
Yeah. Top three, and I thought these were the three guys who were going to garner first place votes, though, as we said earlier, only one guy got first place votes. It was unanimous. But number three, Patrick Peterson. Now, obviously, he's gonna serve the suspension to start the year. Any fall off for Peterson in your mind, Andy, so far in his career?
No, I haven't seen it yet, and it will come at some point, but I have not seen it yet.
Number two, Jalen Ramsey, and we have a Ramsey lightning round question coming up, but I don't know. What was your take on Ramsey's 2018 season? Because I feel like, yes, he was not as good in 2018 as he was in 2017 when he was just absolutely all world. But yep. he had drawn so much attention to himself with all the just really dumb interviews he had given before last season. I mean, Jonathan Jones went down there and tried to talk football with him, and he wasn't really having it. And then, you know, all he wanted to do was talk about everyone sucks but me. But Are we kind of overreacting to what Ramsey was last season what was probably a pretty small drop-off?
Yeah, probably we are, and he probably rubs a lot of people the wrong way, and I've learned I don't care what these guys are in their early 20s. Their worldview is still very much in the developmental stages. Your worldview and my worldview are in the developmental stages in a lot of ways, so I don't care what they say about the bravado and that type of stuff, but I don't know if his technique is quite as buttoned up as you'd like in certain scenarios. I thought there were some cases last year where he played a little too off in his initial coverage. He gave up some completions to running backs who were out wide against him, which really shouldn't be happening. Now, what I love about Ramsey is when he does ratchet it in, which is more often than not. I am not suggesting, I don't mean to be suggesting if I am, that he's a lazy player or an undisciplined technician. But I think he could, like Kyle Fuller, for example, for the Bears. I've had some coaches say, if our guy had the discipline and technique and commitment like Kyle Fuller does, we'd have a top five corner here. And I bet if Ramsey had that, he would be far and away the number one. Now, Fuller might be the most disciplined technician in the NFL at cornerback, but the point is Ramsey's immensely talented. And what I really love, Gary, he's an arm length guy. He's an everything length guy. He's a long body.
Yep.
His late recovery ability is one of the best I've seen. And some of the intercept, Ben Roethlisberger's learned this a couple of times now. Some of Ramsey's interceptions against on the routes that he seemingly gives up and is able to undercut very late in the down, that is the kind of stuff that would make you not want to throw to his side of the field. The reason also that he probably wasn't as good last year is Jacksonville's pass rush took a step back, and that's going to impact corners most of the time.
Mm-hmm. Number one, unanimous number one, and I think there's no doubt he was the best corner in football a year ago, just if you're looking at a more global view. It's a little bit surprising that he was a unanimous number one, but Stephon Gilmore,
easy number one last year, so I guess we're going off of that, because I don't know if I view him as purely the best corner in the NFL. I guess I do, because I voted him number one, which is why I'm saying there's some inconsistency at this position. Ramsey, not as good last year. Lattimore, not as good. Xavier Rhodes certainly was not as good last year. I thought he was the best corner in 2017. So Gilmore has filled the void. He got better a year ago, and he was a huge factor in the Super Bowl and really a huge factor for them all season long. They would not have been where they were if they didn't have him.
Yeah, I mean, look, he had some communication issues that led to blown coverages early in his Patriots tenure there. I think, and not to give him more backhanded compliments here, but I think when you're looking at this list, at the top four guys on this list, I think if you said Stephon Gilmore, Jalen Ramsey, and Marshawn Lattimore all played to the absolute top of their ability in 2019, I think ultimately Ramsey and Lattimore might... you might slot them ahead of Gilmore at this point.
Probably fair. They're probably more purely talented. Gilmore gets the job done, though. He is physical without being super aggressive. He understands timing. I bet he's very frustrating to play against. And he has gotten more comfortable in New England scheme. And New England, what they play a ton of man coverage there. And one thing that Bill Belichick's famous for is putting his number one corner on one receiver and then doubling the other receiver, especially if you've got two stars, like what the Patriots dealt with when they played the Vikings in Week 11 last year, Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs. You need a Stephon Gilmore or a Darrell Revis to make that kind of thing work. And that's really what their whole red zone approach is built around, too.
Yep. Yeah, and they're consistently one of the most efficient red zone teams, and I beg Andy all the time to talk more about red zone stuff. So now I'm pleasantly surprised as we reach the end of our countdown here.
Well, I think the approach in the red zone means something. I think results in the red zone, they vary from year to year, and I've never known what to make of that.
They do. They really do. Well, let's say that's a wrap for the position rankings. Coming up
for all of them. We're not doing special teams. Which I don't, no disrespect, but I don't know where everybody, I don't know who signed what kicker and traded for what punter this year. And
one day, Andy.
What's that? One day? Maybe. Yeah. If there were unlimited time, I'd be all over special teams. They're very interesting, but there's 7 days in a week. Are we doing that offensive line thing that people were bullying us into doing? Breaking it down by position?
Oh, you know what? Let's do it next week on the mailbag show. That'll be a gift. A gift for everyone on the mailbag show.
Maybe someone send in the mailbag question. Hey, can you guys break down the O-line by position just to make it all official and just to activate it for us?
We can't legally do it if we don't have it in question form. We still have the lightning-ish round coming up. But right now, an interview that Andy and I did with AJ Bouye, we did it a little bit earlier this offseason. And like I said, he blew my feeble mind with one of these answers.
AJ Bouye, Jacksonville Jaguars. I want to ask you the first thing. You guys do so much of that Seahawks-style cover three, and obviously you're a perimeter corner in that scheme. Do you view yourself more as a zone corner or man corner within the context of your cover three?
In the context of our cover three, I believe it's more of a man corner basis because, you know, once we draw them, we ride them. That's the terminology that we use there. And, you know, we're always aligned and press. Outside release, inside release, past certain yardage, they're basically our man no matter where they go until they cross certain hashes. So sometimes it's difficult in a scheme, but, you know, we have the corners for it. Usually in that scheme, you have to have the corners for it. And when you mix it up, it's usually hard to know when you're in, man, because sometimes people think cover three, you have droppers, but then you bring in rushers.
Right.
What's that? When we draw them, we ride them.
Yeah,
that's I like that tagline. Yeah,
that's what our old DB coach said, and you know, it's kind of true. So,
correct me if I'm wrong. You used to play inside a little bit in Houston, right?
My last year, we had drafted Kevin Johnson first yep. round, I think the year before, and so we had too many DBs, and I was told they just wanted to find a way to get me out on the field, so I started playing linebackers,
yeah,
safety.
You were all over that.
Yeah. It was very fun, you know, but now I'm outside corner, and, you know, I think it was much easier on the inside than me anyways, and I love the challenge that I have right now. So
you thought it was easier on the inside?
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's easier to study routes, formations. You can get in the run game. You know where your help's at. You have more space to cover, but you also have more help. That's how I would always look at it. And, you know, especially then when I started playing dime, I was matching up against certain slot receivers. Then I would match up against tight ends like mm-hmm. Kelce and Delanie Walker. And going against DeAndre Hopkins every day, a physical receiver, I got used to it. So
that's really interesting. I was going to say, I would have thought outside. I mean, one, you're good at it, so you assume it.
But you have the sideline help.
You have the sideline help.
Yeah, definitely. But, I mean, usually when you're playing outside, you have to go against much taller receivers too. And, you know, in this league now, it's, even though you're taller, you're also faster, you have more space to cover. And it's the only thing that we have to rely on is the sideline. But the quarterbacks are so good and, you know, rules are so strict, you have to be just perfectly flawless. Usually when I watch tape, if you're on the inside, you usually get away with a little bit of a holding and certain type of stuff like that.
Let's say it's a spread empty formation and you guys are in like a man lurk and the lurker's going to be helping on the other side. So you're an ISO man inside in the slot. Is it still easier to play inside versus outside?
No, I remember sometimes it happened a little bit last year. In the first year I got there, it was more like, and that's when I kind of realized it was kind of tough. You know, we start following receivers as corners, and, you know, they would always push the coverage away from me. And sometimes my guy would line up in the slot, and it was like, for example, Robbie Anderson or Travis Benjamin. And I'm following, I'm basically a zero coverage all game. And that's when I realized how tough it was. But I study a lot of film. For example, one of the nickels that I like to really study that's good at that with playing by himself too is Chris Harris, because he's mm-hmm. he's very quick, but he knows where his help is. But even if he doesn't, he always makes a play.
All right. As soon as we booked you, I had one question that I had to ask you. And I'm sorry to bring up bad memories, but and I'll try not to get emotional about this, but AFC title game.
Right.
You had a pass interference call against you, against Brandon Cooks, that was it was unfathomable. It's
illegal to play perfect coverage, though. You know that.
And that's the thing. It's like sometimes you can say, like, you know, well, he got a little bit handsy. You know, he got beat a little bit. It was like a 100% win for you, and then all of a sudden a flag comes out. It's a 34-yard penalty. How do you recover it? Because I'm still upset about it. And this is much, much later in time.
Any corner in the NFL will tell you what type of league it is. And, you know, it's tricks of the trade. I went back and watched that film with some older people who played in the league just to study myself, and they don't know what else they could tell me. Even receivers, well, they might not tell you, but it's a trick that they use sometimes, like usually it's third and long or something like that, and the quarterback chunks it up. They do a good job of trying to pull the player into them instead of the ball.
Yeah.
So sometimes they don't even plan on going for the ball, and they 90% of the time going to get the call. And
who's the best at that, at doing that?
Only time it happened to me was Brandon Cooks, but one player that's good at using his hands also is DeAndre Hopkins.
That's right.
But
yeah.
He knows how to go for the ball. It's different when you're not going for the ball, and sometimes it's blatant, but they usually still call the flag.
So what I want to ask you, I watched every one of your guys' snaps on film this year, and I would say in the majority of games I couldn't track the pattern of who Ramsey was matching and who you were matching and when you were doing it and how, and sometimes you wouldn't match, you'd play sides or boundary or field, whatever. And I asked coaches around the league who played against you guys, hey, do you ever figure out how they're using the corners? Why couldn't anyone figure out exactly how you and Ramsey would be used each week?
I wish I had some pull like some other players. You know, some players could go to a coach and tell them who they want to follow when and whenever. So, you know, us as DBs, we have to adjust to that. And, you know, me and Jalen had good communication where it was like, okay, I understand. This is what you want. The coach is going to let you have it. I don't really care. I'm just trying to win. I'm trying to make plays. Eventually, you know, when you have a corner that good, they're going to still try you. My first year here, I remember sometimes I would get upset in games because I never got any targets because I didn't follow the guy who was getting the targets. But
you're like a wide receiver.
I mean, but that's the game, man. And, you know, when you're winning, it's all good. But when you're not, it kind of sucks because you feel you could do more.
Does Ramsey do some of that on a whim? Like, I got him this snap. Is it like how systematized is he on who he decides he's going to follow?
You know, sometimes it's, I don't know if it's maybe the name or something like that, but that's why I said with me and him, it's usually good communication. For example, I think it was one game, I think they wanted him to follow receiver, and he was just like, why would I follow him? Like, he can't mess with us. Like, and that's always his mindset every week. And sometimes he'll do it because, you know, that's Jalen. He likes a challenge. But even in a game, like, he'll come on the field at a time, he'll be like, man, I already know what you're going to say. Let's just go left and right because I'm just tired of doing this. And we'll start laughing on the field, and then we just get ready to go.
Just talking about statistics really quick, because I know some defensive backs still sort of this will get worked up over, you know, I didn't have as many interceptions this year. I want to get to this interception milestone, which it seems a little archaic. I'm always still surprised when guys say it a little bit, not to lead your answer. Is it a little more satisfactory for you to just be out there and say, well, they didn't throw it at me. I didn't give up an open receiver. That's why I didn't get two interceptions today.
I wouldn't say that, especially for me. I just know how I am. I've always been overlooked, and I always want to prove myself. And when you don't get no targets, you know, it's like, oh, well, he couldn't make no plays. That's always from the outside looking in, and then I think the same way. It's like, dang, I couldn't make any plays. I didn't have no opportunities. And, you know, sometimes I have a bad attitude, like, the whole week because I'm practicing and I'm following this guy, and he's going hard, and then my mom, I'm like, they're not even throwing it this way. And then it happens in the game, and they don't throw it this way, and I'm just like, but – that's one thing I got to learn from, and hopefully I can start making plays. But, you know, the way both of us is playing as corners, that's always usually a good thing if they don't really target us. So,
what's the most difficult cover three beater design for you to defend?
For example, I'll say the Buffalo game. You know, we're taught to drop everything at the hash. And
when you say drop everything at the hash, take me through the mechanics just so our listeners know what you're saying.
So you'll see – how can I say, Miami kind of does the same thing, you know, when they have players who their corners, the receiver runs an over route.
You pass them off to the safety? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, sometimes you pass them off to the safety, and sometimes it works, sometimes it don't. But receivers got so good at hiding their stems or hiding their routes that they know how to beat the scheme with that, and coaches are teaching them to run it like this. So one thing with our defense, during the first year, we would see a lot of stuff on film, and we'll see it again. This year, we really got game plan to where things we were practicing and seeing on film, we wouldn't see in the game at all.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so the only team we would actually see something from was Tennessee and maybe New England, I think, the first game, because they always stay true to what they do.
Okay. So when you pass off that safety in the corner, then you go back to center field and look for deep posts coming from the other side?
Not even deep posts. We just look for work. It just depends on, you know, what their personnel is, who's the weapons. Like, if your best player is a running back, sometimes you might have to stay back even further for the screen or things like that. It's always game planning. That's one thing that I love about Coach Walsh. He's always game planning the offense. And unfortunately, like I said, they really was game planning us, and we was able to adjust, but sometimes it was just too late.
You want to do some best of?
Yeah.
Lightning round?
Yeah.
All right. Who's excluding teammates? Best contested catch guy that you face.
Oh, hold on. And also excluding DeAndre Hopkins. Let's put some thought into that. He's basically a teammate.
Oh, that's best contested catch. I'll go with Antonio Brown. I didn't learn that until I played him in the playoffs. I didn't know how good he was with holding off a player and still able to catch it. I think the first play that he scored on me, he was able to hold me off with his right hand and push off and still get 2 feet in at the corner end of the end zone and catch it with one hand. And then the second time he scored, I was in phase with him. He pulled me through, and he showed his hands late and caught it, like, right near his shins. And usually it's hard for receivers to show their hands late, especially while contested. And then you see him do it in the league this past year. He does it all the time. So contested wise, I'm gonna have to go with him.
All right, yeah, that's show hands late. I love that's what Randy Moss used to do. Everyone thinks Randy Moss is this sprinter, leaper. He would just leap his hands down by his pockets,
and
basically, and wait for the ball, and no one ever knew when to, to look.
It's funny. Kareem Jackson gave the same answer. Antonio Brown. It's funny. I was wondering. He's a smaller guy, so what he does looks so subtle. It's almost like, and I know we're watching from a camera angle, so we're not down on the field, but it just doesn't look like he's doing anything until you see like the replay. It's like, that's how that happened.
I like to study a lot of players, especially past and present. And one thing that he kind of reminds me of with it, Jerry Rice with the work ethic, but Jerry Rice wasn't the fastest, the most explosive, but when he gets on that field, he looks like the best player out there. And that's the same thing with Antonio Brown. He's a great athlete. And just the work ethic that he puts in and things that he do for his team, you see it week in, week out.
You could probably answer Brown on this one again, so I'm going to reshape the question. Best route runner, but let's say most nuanced, underappreciated route runner.
Best route runner, I'll have to go with either Odell Beckham or Keenan Allen.
Okay, yeah.
So Odell, I heard he used to play soccer or something like that, and you kind of could see it with his feet. He's so quick coming out of his routes, and he know how to switch up his stems, but he has so much freedom in his routes that he could still come out right on time. And Keenan Allen is just crafty off the line.
Oh, his hips.
Guarding him the first year was pretty tough. We came out with the win, but, I have respect for him as a receiver, basically all the receivers and, Phillip Rivers.
Nice. Do we have any more of those?
Maybe we could go all day, but he's got things to do. We appreciate you, AJ.
No problem. Thank y'all, man.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Absolutely. Thanks, AJ.
That was fun.
Yeah, so there you go, Andy, and as you can tell, he completely blew my mind when he explained why he prefers, or I should say why he thinks it's so much easier to play the slot than it is to play the boundary.
Well, two things. One is he spent a lot of time in zone schemes, especially in Jacksonville. And in Houston, they weren't quite a zone. They play a lot of quarters there, which I think starts out like zone. And for a slot guy, it's really more zone than man. So I wonder if he'd feel that way if he were a pure man-to-man corner. But two, I've only heard one other guy say that it's easier to play the slot than outside. You know who I heard say it?
Kenny Moore?
Stephon Gilmore.
Really?
Yeah.
That is surprising.
He said that to me on our MMQB. I filled in for Peter King like 2 or 3 years ago, and he was one of the interviews I did for the Monday Morning Quarterback, and he made that point. Now, he did play slot a little bit early in his career, but he's been mainly an outside corner, which might be why he feels that way.
Yeah, and he just kind of, he looks like an outside corner. He's a long, long dude.
That was the interview. I know I've shared this on the air, so this will not be like my, this will be like my Scott Turner story, but not as bad. That was the interview where Gilmore was telling me that he got married and he was describing the groomsmen in his wedding. And do you remember this story?
I don't.
He was saying the groomsmen in his wedding, and he said, I don't remember the guy's name, but Tim Wilkins was one of my groomsmen. He was my roommate at South Carolina. He was also one of our special teamers. Alshon Jeffrey was another groomsman. He was also on the South Carolina team with me, and now he plays in the NFL for the Chicago Bears. This was a few years ago. Another one, Jadeveon Clowney, he's in the NFL too for the Houston Texans. He was with me at South Carolina. And there was one other guy. He listed like the most superstar-struck groomsmen you've ever heard, but he had described them as if like nobody had ever heard of them, and he went through each guy one at a time, probably because he started with the one that nobody actually ever had heard of.
Yeah, his occupation is professional football player as well. That is a pretty good story, and that brings us to the best part of any show, the lightningish round. And even better, Andy, the lightningish round this week starts with a trivia challenge.
Oh, that's right. And I've been thinking, I didn't look this, you sent this to me a little earlier and I didn't look this up. I wanted to have integrity for our listeners here.
So the question is, name the cornerback who is the only non-quarterback and non-specialist to play in every game this decade in the 2010s. And I do have some hints. And do you want me to reveal the hints as we go, Andy, and people can sort of think about it as we go?
You're going to have to reveal the first hint. because I've been, that's the one I've been thinking around, and I'll give you, I am not even close still on this. I have not thought of the guy at all.
So the streak started in 2008. So he goes all the way back to 2008, not just 2010. He was a fifth round rookie. He started his first game as a rookie, and he has started every game since. So he has started every game since 2008. The next hint is he has never gotten an All-Pro or Pro Bowl honor.
Okay.
He's currently on his third NFL team.
Oh, it's Brandon Carr.
It is Brandon Carr.
Yeah.
The last hint was going to be the first game of his career was when Tom Brady tore his ACL.
On the hit from Bernard Pollard.
Against the Chiefs in Foxborough. I was shocked to see that Brandon Carr has...
I heard that last year, too, that Carr has played every game. I was...
Started every game, too.
Started every game, yeah. At a high level. He's a good... He's gotten paid a few times. He's a good player. I think he has not slowed down yet, and I imagine they thought he would because they've drafted some corners, including Marlon Humphrey. And yet, yeah, Brandon Carr, he's had a very stellar career. He's on the... Like Ike Taylor was this guy for a long time in my mind, and maybe Brandon Carr is now this guy, the all like good player team, like just a good, maybe didn't have the accolades, but just a good freaking player for a very long time.
Yes, I agree with that, but we are not going to take nominations for a third team. So don't send
them in. You don't want to do an all good player team as well?
Maybe next year. After Brandon Carr starts another 16
like
games.
These are like guys, it's like almost like the all role player team, but it's a step above role players.
Yeah.
You're better than a role player.
You're a quality starter.
Yes.
Long-term quality starter. Next one in the lightning-ish round, and I love how much time we're taking here. Would you give Jalen Ramsey a market-setting contract right now?
You know, I would in the as a concept in the conceptual stage, but Ryan Taylor pointed out to me the other day about Jacksonville's salary cap situation. I guess they don't have like any money available next year. So I don't know what's going to happen with Jalen Ramsey because I think you do want to pay. I think he deserves it. I think he's the best. But if they don't have the available cap space, that's going to be a complicated scenario. I don't know if Ramsey's going to be understanding of that.
I think they'll figure it out. I think they'll make it happen.
Do you know what their cap space is right now? If 2020 were to start tomorrow,
they've been right up against it. They've really been right up against it ever since they made that Marcell Dareus trade.
Well, they're $14.7 million over the cap. Now, I also see here Marcell Dareus though can be cut for a cap savings. So not even a cash savings. The cap savings would be $20 million next year, which I'm willing to bet Marcell Dareus is in his final year with the Jacksonville Jaguars, certainly on that contract he's on.
Yeah, yep.
Calais Campbell can be cut for $15 million cap savings. Our guy A.J. Bouye can be cut for $11.5 million savings.
Campbell's going to be interesting to me.
Same here. I would, and you know, teams tell you, a lot of times we think they tell you how they feel about their roster by how they draft, and they do, big time. But what they also tell you is how they feel about next year's roster. Because a lot of teams draft, not for this year, but for the year after. And the Jaguars, just not that these guys play the exact same position, but they're going to sign Yannick Ngakoue to a long-term deal. And they just drafted Josh Allen as well, who's projected as a pure defensive end. So unless they see Campbell as a long-term defensive tackle, and by the way, they drafted Taven Bryan last year, defensive tackle in the first round. My guess is they believe they're going to move on from Campbell.
Yeah, and look, Taven Bryan was a guy who was a little bit raw too, so this is probably pretty much the timeline they thought he'd be on. Last one here, Andy. Breakout player for 2019 or your underappreciated star besides Brandon Carr?
One and the same. I like Chidobe Awuzie in Dallas. I thought he played very well last season. And I like all those Cowboys defensive backs. You know how I feel about Anthony Brown. I'm disappointed that he didn't make our top 10. Been a big Anthony Brown guy for a long time. Another guy who can play inside or outside, by the way. I think Jordan Lewis is probably the best number four corner in the NFL. And I think those guys will remain number three and number four because Awuzie deserves to be the number two.
I love Pierre Desir. As my underappreciated guy, I think this time next year, Jair Alexander is going to be in our top five cornerbacks. I think it's going to be that kind of breakout for him.
That would not shock me. So you would take Jair Alexander over Denzel Ward if you had to invest in one. They're similar styles of guy.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Not by much, though. Denzel Ward has his own charms.
Fine. He does. Denzel Ward has a chance to be the best all-around man slash zone corner in the NFL. I wonder about the durability a little bit. That's a big concern, in fact. But there are a lot of good young corners in football right now. It'll be interesting to see if that changes the landscape of the league at all.
There are, yeah. Defense striking back a little bit. Big-time receiver class coming in 2020, though.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah. I mean, obviously they won't all hit, but there are a good like 7 or 8 guys you'd probably put a first round grade on right now. And if
why is it that we only talk receiver? Like, we always know like how good the next year's receiver class will be, and I never hear about any other position like that. Like, oh, it's going to be a good linebacker class in 2 years. You never hear that, but you, for whatever reason, we always broadcast how good the receiving class will be.
Well, one, we say that with quarterbacks all the time.
Oh, okay, sure.
Number two,
I view them as totally separate guys.
I think the fact that it's, you know, the stats are so easily accessible for receivers, you can, you know, take a glance and see what's coming up. And I think
is that how people do it? Is that how the draft analysts are looking at that right now?
No, but I think it sparks your attention.
Does it? That's amazing to me. If I were running a front office, I don't think I'd ever look at the receiver stats.
No, that's fair. I'm just saying that's why receivers tend to garner attention.
Receivers do not inherently translate from college to the NFL very well. I think the difference in the game impacts receivers quite a bit.
No, I agree with that. Stop yelling at me, Andy. I'm just saying people see the big numbers, especially in college with all the, you know, Big 12, every game is 80 to 70, and they see those numbers, and I think it catches people's attention. That's all.
That's amazing to me.
That's all. Not necessarily the professionals, not necessarily the analysts, but I think that's why receivers are talked about a lot.
Well, anyone listening to our show, I beg you, please be more disciplined than that. College stats.
Agreed. That's a wrap, Andy. Mailbag show coming next week. You can write in about everything you hated, but mostly everything you loved about the position ranking series this year. It's always fun. This is always a fun time of year. It feels like we just finished the season here.
You find these position show exhausting, do you?
They are a little bit. It's a labor of love, but yeah, they take a little more out of you.
Well, yeah, we'll do a couple more shows. I would like to add that all role player, good player team, but you're not going to let me do that. No. So we'll do our other all whatever teams, and then we'll be around regular season time by then, I would hope.
Yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah, we're getting there. But that's going to do it for now. Thanks again to AJ Bouye for talking to us and blowing our minds. Thanks to our researchers, Reed Foster and Ryan Taylor, who are our third and fourth voters this week. And as always, thank you to Brandon Nix, our favorite producer in the world. Most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. Please, if you don't already, be sure to subscribe to the MMQB Podcast family wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, radio.com/10things, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We'll see you guys next week.